want you to know, your freedom's already won.
Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference for hope. Today is Monday, May 22nd, 2023. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern. If you're listening live over our radio or another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can go to nationallibertyalliance.org and click on our weekly call for instructions to join us by phone, app, or browser. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions@nationallibertyalliance.org. That's plural, questions. Please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of the website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save our republic. You can also support us by purchasing the books, Government by Consent and Court Access in the Common Law, also found on the right-hand side of our website. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab, top right-hand side of our website. Okay, we're going to pick up where we left off last week in our scripture reading. We're in the first epistle of John. We'll be reading chapter 4, read by Alexander Scorby.
Chapter 4. Beloved, believe not every spirit, but try the spirits whether they are of God, because many false prophets are gone out into the world. Hereby know ye the Spirit of God. Every spirit that confesseth that Jesus Christ is come in the flesh is of God, and every spirit that confesseth not that Jesus Christ is come in the flesh is not of God. And this is that spirit of Antichrist, whereof ye have heard that it should come, and even now already is it in the world. Ye are of God, little children, and have overcome them, because greater is he that is in you than he that is in the world. They are of the world, therefore speak they of the world, and the world heareth them. We are of God. He that knoweth God heareth us. He that is not of God heareth not us. Hereby know we the spirit of truth and the spirit of error. Beloved, let us love one another, for love is of God, and everyone that loveth is born of God and knoweth God. He that loveth not knoweth not God, for God is love. In this was manifested the love of God toward us, because that God sent his only begotten Son into the world that we might live through him. Herein is love, not that we loved God, but that he loved us and sent his Son to be the propitiation for our sins. Beloved, if God so loved us, we ought also to love one another. No man hath seen God at any time. If we love one another, God dwelleth in us, and his love is perfected in us. Hereby know we that we dwell in him and he in us, because he hath given us of his Spirit. And we have seen and do testify that the Father sent the Son to be the Savior of the world. Whosoever shall confess that Jesus is the Son of God, God dwelleth in him, and he in God. And we have known and believed the love that God hath to us. God is love, and he that dwelleth in love dwelleth in God, and God in him. Herein is our love made perfect, that we may have boldness in the day of judgment, because as he is, so are we in this world. There is no fear in love, but perfect love casteth out fear, because fear hath torment. He that feareth is not made perfect in love. We love him because he first loved us. If a man say, I love God, and hateth his brother, he is a liar. For he that loveth not his brother whom he hath seen, how can he love God whom he hath not seen? And this commandment have we from him, that he who loveth God love his brother also.
Okay, Jan, do we have any questions tonight or any announcements?
We have a bunch of questions, John. Let me hook up my mic here, or my speaker. First question, is an autograph and signature both binding on a legal document?
I think you asked this question last week. This is a difference. Well, I think last week was a difference between an autograph and a signature, right? There's a lot of interference coming through. Just got better, though.
Okay.
Did it lose? Okay, there you go.
Did you get that first question? I was hooking up my headset.
Yeah, there was a lot of interference. Start all over. Look ahead.
Is an autograph and signature both binding on a legal document?
Well, we did talk about this, I think it was last week, and, you know, signature is something that, of course, you know, you would sign in some with a witness and to be notarized and so on and so forth. But an autograph is different. I remember we looked it up. I forget exactly what it was. But an autograph is something, goodness, I forget the meaning. Maybe someone else might remember. But anyway, yeah, a signature is what's necessary in order to sign a document to make it valid, not an autograph.
Okay. When using affirmative defenses, is the motion to dismiss or must the title include one of the defenses?
Well, an affirmative defense ultimately is admitting to the position that the other person has taken against you. In other words, you would be the defendant in this case, usually anyway. And you would confirm the fact that, yes, you know, it's true, I didn't do this and I didn't do that. But then you have a reason for it. And in one case, it might be, well, you know, I didn't do it because he was supposed to pay me X amount of dollars and cover the materials. They didn't do that, and that's why it wasn't done. And that's kind of the idea of an affirmative defense. There's quite a few affirmative defenses, of course. We went through quite a few of them a couple of weeks ago in our course.
Okay. What would the proper vocabulary or term be for everything prior to my obtaining case files be heresy? Going on 2 years as I'm in another state, today for the first time seeing the case record, everything from an affidavit of probable cause, if that's even allowed. I thought I would see something from the prosecutor.
Well, again, I don't know. Read the first part of that, first couple of sentences.
Going on 2 years as I'm in another state, today for the first time seeing the case record.
Okay.
Everything.
Stop there. Okay. The fact that you're 2 years on a case, I mean, something is wrong there. You know, one of the things you have to do is you have to move your case. And if you're not moving your case, it, you know, it just stagnates and dies. Especially if you're the plaintiff and the other side is a defendant, and they're not going to complain about that because eventually the case will drop dead. And so you have a certain amount of time to do certain things. The other thing is you might file some papers and maybe not put a notice of motion if you're moving the court some way. So if you don't put a notice of motion in front of your paperwork and the other side ignores it and it goes through silence, all this falls apart. So I don't know exactly what's going on in that case. 2 years is quite some time. There's got to be a reason for it taking so long. And if nothing's happening, if nothing has happened for over a year or so, the case is probably closed. So I don't know what's going on in that case.
Okay, this is probably a continuation. The statement from police officer shows he forgot exactly what transpired, as well as missing evidence, as they confiscated my medicine and didn't report both items. To correspondence between my attorney and another completing documents with an electronic signature without my knowledge or consent. Do I request the body cam footage and go back to the beginning to prove and correct all of it and shine light on all the unlawful fraudulent activities pulling in the officer and attorney, or is that opening a separate case?
Well, again, it sounds like it might be part of the case, but again, it is. I have no clue on what's going on, and I really can't say much of what to do on that. Court cases, especially if you're the defendant, you got to really be alert. You got, and it doesn't matter, even if you're the plaintiff, either way, you really have to be on top of the case on everything that's going on and everything that's happening as far as every word written, every sentence, every paragraph, every position, and you have to be on top of it all. And if you're not, that's where your weakness will be, and that's where, could be the cause of the fall of your case. But again, I don't know the details of the case, so I don't know how to even, give you any thoughts or ideas on that. If there's a body cam and it can prove something that you want it to be proven, then you should pursue getting that. So you have to, file the necessary papers in order to get all that information. And they can't, they can't reject it. So I don't know if you haven't gotten it. I guess you haven't asked for it yet. So I don't even know how to respond further than that.
Okay. At last Saturday's class, I asked about writing a motion of summary judgment as my next step as the Hawaii teacher who left due to COVID mandates. John suggested I write a notice and demand as well as an affidavit laying out the timeline of events. I've actually done this already. Here is what I've done, all by certified returned receipt mail to the superintendent who is state appointed, therefore a government trustee. In September 2021 to October 2021, I mailed, one, a notice of demand to rescind all COVID mandates, two, an affidavit of demand to show clean hands and federal partnership, stating my rights to religious freedom and privacy, and three, a notice of default. Then in May 2022 and June of 2022, I mailed an affidavit of truth and fact listing times and dates of the written memos from the superintendent of tyrannical coercion to comply with COVID-19 mandates or get terminated. Two, a notice of fault with opportunity to cure, and three, a notice of fault. My question is, since both affidavits have gone unrebutted by this government trustee, do I prep my case to submit to the court with a motion of summary judgment, or do I send him an invoice for his trespasses, or mail him a quoronto, or a reminder?
Well, if the person is pushing for a motion for a default judgment, the thing is you have to go to the clerk, and you have to file an affidavit of default, and pursue it through the clerk at that point. Of course, a notice is made to the whole court, but you pursue it through the clerk. If you skip that part and don't go to the clerk, you're stagnant. You're not going anywhere. And if you continue to fail to do that, eventually your case will be closed. Again, it gets back to not understanding how procedure works. The other thing, and this is due process. You know, this is what due process is all about. And again, it's not really all that difficult. But what gets difficult is the details of the case, making sure you cover everything, understanding what the other side is doing and planning, and being able to neutralize anything that they bring up. And that you should be able to do just by paying attention if you've got the upper hand in the case. The other thing is a notice for a summary judgment. A summary judgment usually can't be filed until it's time for the trial. And so when the paperwork starts to go forward for being prepared for the trial, that's when you would bring forth a notice for a potential summary judgment. And, you know, you have to have all the evidence in both sides, and you can't do it too prematurely because there's other things that may, you know, counteract whatever it is that you're doing, thinking that you can file this summary judgment, whatever that might be, I don't know. I'm sure that there are some cases that it could be filed early, but it would have to be so obvious and so, you know, just so damning to the other side that it just doesn't matter what they bring up, the case can't go any further. And you win by a summary judgment. So, on the other side of things, if they defaulted somewhere, then that notice of default, you should have done that something with the clerk, filing with the clerk, and moved for a summary, a notice of default, and then brought it to the sheriff for execution.
Okay. The definition of a quo warranto is a special form of legal action used to resolve a dispute over whether a specific person has the legal right to hold the public office that he or she occupies. A quo warranto is used to test the person's legal right to hold an office, not to evaluate the person's performance in the office. Through my research, I then found the following. What is the prerogative writ of quo warranto, meaning what is your authority? A writ of quo warranto prevents an individual from holding an office they are not entitled to. An individual must show evidence that they have the authority to hold that office.
Okay, that's okay. Well, a writ quo warranto is the prerogative of the sovereign. We the people are the sovereign. Generally, all the writs really focus in on the sovereign. Although judges or others might write writs, it really belongs originally to the sovereign. Writ of mandamus normally is done by the sovereign. But again, it can be used from other sides in other ways. But generally speaking, the prerogative to write it is the fact that you're sovereign. A quo warranto is exactly pretty much what you're saying, but it's more than that. Of course, the whole thing is the demand to prove that they have the qualifications to hold that office by producing the oath, the bond, and their financials, because those are the three necessary things that are required before anyone can take office. And the process of writing a quo warranto usually is a problem that they have violated something, and therefore you're calling for those things, and eventually that needs to be followed up with moving towards, an arbitrator within the place wherever it is that they got the bond from. The bonding company will hold an arbitration separate from any court case, and if they did violate their oath, then of course the damages would be given to the individual who was injured. But a quo warranto is a pretty powerful thing because everything has to cease and desist if they don't respond in 10 days. That's the law. That's the code. It's written up that way. And so if they don't go forward, if they don't produce these things in 10 days, they vacate their office. And that's a problem for a judge. Of course, you know, they're going to ignore all this, but it is something to do and move forward on. Be interesting to see how things work out, and depending on, you know, the case. Well, you know, how evil, I guess, or how out of control the judge is, you know. But anyway, that's I guess that's answering the question.
Okay, I was listening to another legal show, and this was discussed, and I wanted your take on the prerogative writ of quo warranto. So do you agree and take this to say that if we file a quo warranto, that we are saying that we are wanting to take over and hold that position?
Oh, no, not at all. Anybody can take over that and hold that position once it becomes vacant. You're not necessarily doing it for that purpose. And, you know, the way we write it is a very, very careful way of writing it. You know, we're not out to attack or anything the individual, but this is the law. They have to have these things. We want to make sure they have that. After all, they're acting outside of their authority, and they need to be held accountable. But getting back to the word prerogative, that's the prerogative of the sovereign. That's what writs are, the prerogative of the sovereign.
Okay. Can you please discuss impeachment of removal, not of Trump, but of the judges, and what that entails, the process, and when should such be pursued?
Well, it's an interesting question because they never exercise that power and authority. Impeachment is the power of the legislator, and that should take place on the federal level, on a federal officer or judge or whatever, particularly a judge. You know, all these problems we have, Congress could have repaired this. And but it takes people who are patriots, people who know and believe the Constitution and acknowledge it and honor their oaths. And the unfortunate thing is the people that we put in these places, these positions, don't honor their oath. They don't have any. They're people without integrity. But the proper process when a judge is out of order, okay, it is the job of the legislators to impeach that judge. Again, state level is one end, and of course on the other side is the federal level. But we're never seeing that done. I've never seen it done. I'm totally amazed when I watch what's going on in Congress. And you hear these interviews with people and stuff and different people that running different agencies and they just refuse to answer or they give these deflective answers and they'll repeat the same thing over and over again. I've even heard people that are in office that have a duty to come and speak and respond to the duties that they have in a particular office, and where they would plead the Fifth Amendment. It's just amazing. They can't plead the right to not be a witness against themselves. They can't plead that at all because they have a duty. And the duty says you can't remain silent. They have a duty to speak concerning the office that they hold. I watch all this stuff, and it's just very frustrating because Congress walks away and nothing ever happens to these people. They get up there, they lie, they refuse to answer, and nothing seems to happen. Something's definitely wrong somewhere. Now, we do know that the agencies are really controlled by the president, but I still got to believe Congress has the authority and the right to know what's going on. And they have oversight committees on different things. It could be the Judiciary Committee. It could be things that are secret, you know. But they have the oversight, and people need to answer the questions. So I'm not exactly sure how far Congress can go on that. But I do know that the president has the power to fire them. It may be rough to do because it's not done often. Trump did it, but on a couple of individuals, but enforced others out. But you know, again, the system is really being abused, and it's up to we, the people, to clean it up. You know, and the only way we're going to do that is exercise our right of government by consent, and we have to have enough people doing that across the nation. So. All right, next question.
Are you familiar with Title 28, U.S. Code, Chapter 16, Complaints Against Judges and Judicial Discipline?
Well, no, not particularly. I mean, I would have to know, you know, the details of the particular code and to really understand and consider whether I know, I'm, you know, familiar with it or not. But, of course, when you have a situation or a problem with the judge, you do want to look in to see whatever you can use, whatever codes can be used against them. But again, I don't know particularly about that.
Okay. About 2 weeks ago, we had a question that alluded to something Cash Patel said about jury nullification being totally unconstitutional. I think you had a chance to look it up. Would you like to comment on that?
Well, yeah, I did. It's alarming that he doesn't understand the jury nullification, the power of the people. We the people ordained and established. We are the final arbiters of all law. Our decisions are final. The United States Supreme Court can't even overturn a jury decision. Not in any court or any judge or any place anywhere can overturn an indictment. They can't quash an indictment. You know, again, we the people are the final word. Now, they do whatever they want. We see judges who will overturn a jury's decision and the people have to go back to trial. Well, that's double jeopardy. Plus, there's no power or authority. How is it that the judge is above the people? These are elected individuals. They're political animals. They have no power and no authority to judge anybody. Okay? The only judgment they can is to judge themselves in equity courts. And that's the only power and authority that we the people gave them in the Constitution. We did not give them any power or authority to judge anyone inside a court of law. That's the people's job. And the idea, I mean, the founding of everything we've got, I mean, you know, you go back to the Kentucky resolutions where Jefferson and was involved with, and there's a couple of states involved with this kind of thing where Jefferson said the solution, the proper solution is nullification. Just nullify it. Look at, take the 16th Amendment, the 17th Amendment. They need to be nullified. We don't need a constitutional convention to get rid of those. They're obviously repugnant on its face. And yet, you know, we still have these two amendments there, and Congress hasn't done anything. It's going to be interesting to watch what they're going to do once we get to the other side to repair these problems. But we definitely, you know, the answer to a lot of this is what's called the Republic Review, which a guy named GR has been working on. We do support that work, and where he's pushing forward for the states to come together and to really deal with all the unconstitutional legislation on the federal level particularly, and to nullify it, because that's the proper solution. Anything that's repugnant, nullify, get rid of it. We don't need a constitutional convention to do that. But anyway, nullification, let's look at it this way. When the legislators make law, they have to do it in with a realization and an understanding of the common law. In other words, it's got to have common sense, supported by maxims, things that are obvious. So when they create a code or a statute, and it is in opposition to justice, it's in opposition to the Bill of Rights, something in the Bill of Rights, or it's in opposition even to any place in the Constitution. Well, it's just it's null and void on its face. Nullification is the proper way. So if we have elected individuals in order to represent us in the legislature, we've given them 18 powers in order to that they can legislate on. 17, the 18th is the power to write the law. But, you know, we've given them the powers, 18 powers. And when they abuse those 18 powers, they get it wrong, or the people believe in the case that's being used against somebody that it just doesn't work, it's unrighteous, it's unjust, or whatever the case may be, the people have the power of nullification. When someone like Cash Patel really says something like this, it's really alarming. I didn't realize it until I looked a little deeper into him to see that he was a prosecutor and a lawyer. Obviously, he's a lawyer. And so he's bar taught, and therein is the problem, because all bar taught individuals are poisoned. They have these false foundations, these beliefs and understanding. They think that the common law has been abrogated. And the sad thing is he's got a close relationship with Trump. So he's an advisor, and it's a problem. And only the people can fix this problem. We have to get enough people going throughout the nation to step up to take care of these problems. So people have to get involved. All right, next.
That was the last question, John.
Do we have any particular announcements?
No, I do not.
Okay. All right, I got one.
John, you wanted to mention the COS committee leadership meeting,
right?
For Wednesday.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, you know, the meeting is really for the district coordinators. Anybody that is or claims to want to be a district coordinator needs to be at this meeting. We need 10 individuals. We do have some, but you know, some people just aren't active. They're not doing anything. And maybe a lot of this might be my fault that I didn't really sit down and write up a plan of action on how one might proceed. So we're going to have a meeting this Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Anybody that is signed up for that needs to be there if they're going to continue. If you're signed up for that and you don't come, we're going to presume you're not interested. We'll just fill the positions with someone else if we can. Anybody interested in that position, just show up on the Monday night meeting here at 9 p.m. We don't want to really fill the room up with people who aren't going to participate. We really would like to just have the people who want to participate. If you think you might want to participate and you're not sure and you want to come, well, of course, that's fine. These positions, which will be at least 10 positions, it may be more, but once we get to full time, I think 10 people should be able to handle it. But if we have to get more people than 10 to handle it, we will deal with that. We need people who can articulate themselves on a phone, that feel comfortable talking to people. That's what we need to fill these positions, because the position really is making contact with all of the Committee of Safety leaders down on the county level in order to work with them, to assist them in the building of their committees of safety and getting them educated. And so, again, we have a lot of information that we put together and a plan, you know, how the phone calls should go, you know, what you cover on the first phone call and the second phone call and so on. And as they reach certain points in the development of their committee of safety, you know, we have to address certain things. And in that slow process, as we move along over the months, the people will become fully informed on exactly what it is that they're doing and how they need to, construct or put together their committees of safety. So again, anybody interested in that? Now, the word did go out to the people that are, quite a few people. How many committees of safety do we have out there, at least that appear to be in motion? Do you know, Jan? I think someone had a number.
I think there's 137 COS leaders out there, and that was really what Ed was trying to address.
Okay.
For this meeting, because they keep coming to him with questions, and so we thought maybe we could get them all together and get their questions answered.
Well, yeah, they can come. They should come to this Monday meeting. We will be addressing directly the 10 district or the potential district coordinators first, and it'd be good for them to hear what we're going to be talking about, because it'll probably solve a lot of their questions. And then, of course, after we go through this process, then which might take an hour. Hopefully it's not going to take any longer than an hour. And then we could do an open forum, and then anybody who can ask any questions, and particularly the people in their counties that are bringing together their committees of safety, they can ask whatever questions they want. Now, we did write a handbook, and we do have a page called Help, where some information is detailed. We also have on our website, we have under the Start a Committee of Safety, if you come down to Handbooks and Tools, We have a tremendous amount of information on how to construct, how to put together a committee of safety. Now, I did just update this just the other day as I'm working on preparing for the meeting for Wednesday, and I highlighted this, your committee of safety seminar instructions, video and PowerPoint videos. I may not have been clear enough on this, but I laid this out in a way that makes it very simple, very obvious, puts everything together for a group of people to come together and do their seminar. The seminar should be between 3 and 4 hours. You should tell people it's going to be about as long as 4 hours long. It may end in 3 hours, but you know, you want that extra time, so 4 hours. But we lay out exactly what to be done and what to be covered, and what videos to play, and so on. And of course, you know, people can do any way they want, but you have to, of course, bring the proper picture of what a committee of safety is, how our founding fathers participated in it, where we got it from was from them, and how we put it together ourselves in today's day and age, so to speak. I also, something new I put in here was the monthly meeting protocol. Again, it's instructive, and it gives people, you know, some information and something to work off of. You know, as you develop these things, you'll pick up on it, and it'll become old hat, and you'll, you know, people will figure out what needs to be done, because really what it's all about is holding government accountable. That's what the committees of safety are all about, to make sure that they're operating under the Constitution, that they're being, you know, obedient to their oath, not coming outside of their jurisdictions in whatever powers they've been given, and so on. So again, that's some more new information I put up here. Nevertheless, all of this stuff is inside of the Committee of Safety Organizing Handbook. And that's 68 pages, step by step, point by point. But again, when people come, you know, there's a lot of information. I'm sure people are overwhelmed by the amount of information that we have on the website, overwhelmed on how to create a committee of safety and so on and so forth. So they need some instructions. They need some assistance. And again, that is the purpose of the district coordinators. They are the face of National Liberty Alliance in talking with all of the committees of safety. And our purpose is to assist them in educating, in organizing, and also in communicating between themselves. And also getting some dialogue, which will start soon, hopefully in the next month or two. We're going to use the very first Monday of every month for the sole purpose of really pulling together the committee of correspondence chairman down on the committee of safety level. And if they don't have if they haven't developed to that point yet, whoever is signed up as the contact, that's the person who should come. And we want to get some dialogue going on some of the national issues and propose some of the solutions that people might want to start working on and exercise and work together county to county, state to state, in order to bring back, you know, whatever government agencies or whatever it is back under the subjection of the people. And so we need to get this. There's lots of things to discuss and lots of things to think about. And lots of things that we have to work out on how we're going to approach to fix some of these problems that affect all of us in every single county and every single state. So that's why it's important. The Committee of Correspondence is extremely important. Remember, the Committee of Safety worked within their own counties, dealing with their own problems, you know, whatever local government that they have to deal with it. In our case, it could be a county government. It could be a you know, a town, a city government, a village. So, you know, whoever we're dealing with. But, you know, when you're dealing with a state problem, in the case of New York, for instance, we have 62 counties. So we have, you know, 62 counties that have to work together, or at least a majority of them, in order to deal with a state problem. Same thing with the federal level. You know, we have 3,134 counties, and of that, you know, broken up into 50 states, of course. But we need to get 25 or 30 states working together to solve a problem, to make sure it gets done. The other thing is, how do we control our people that want to go into office, and how do we control those individuals? How do we choose those individuals? We need to understand, they need to understand the Constitution, because that's their marching orders. I really don't care what their opinions are. We shouldn't care what their opinions are. They should keep their opinions to themselves, in my opinion, anyway. What we're interested in, before we make anybody try to get anyone into office, we want to make sure they're a statesman. We want to make sure that they know the Constitution. We want to make sure that they understand by what powers and authorities they act by. You know, if we're dealing with legislators, they need to understand what they can legislate and what they can't legislate. You know, so it depends on who we're dealing with and at what level. So again, committees of safety, you know, they work out the problems from their own perspective, from their own position. And of course, within a county committee of safety, they deal with particular individuals, for instance, maybe a congressman, and they may get a good congressman in there. But if the county next door to them, or the other counties throughout the state, or most of the other counties throughout the state, are not putting statesmen in, you know, it's an uphill battle, because you only got a couple of good people that are trying to do the right thing when you get them in office. So anyway, we have to make sure that these people know the law, that they understand their powers and authorities. And one of the things I'm going to propose, it's up to the people to exercise it. You know, I can't make anybody do anything, and of course we can't dictate to anyone, but we can show them the problem, throw out potential solutions, get some conversation going, and try to work together, just like our founding fathers did, and come up with some solutions and act in one, with one accord. And that's what we need to do. So what I'm going to be proposing also to, in order to deal with this problem of education, is to suggest very strongly, because remember, the committees of safety will be the people who put people in power. They are the true committeemen. They will walk the papers to get them onto the ballot. And you want to make sure you get a statesman onto the ballot. And a statesman, of course, is one that is honorable and just and being obedient to the powers and not overstepping their authority. And so they need to know what that is, and they don't. I mean, goodness, we the people don't even know what it is unless we go and learn it. And that's what National Liberty Alliance is all about. People are learning it. And that's, you know, I've learned it before. I didn't know it because no one taught it to me, but I had to figure it out. I had to find it and research it. And it's on our website. So the course that we're doing right now, which is Court Access in the Common Law, covers so much. It really covers everything we really need to know. I think it's pulling together all our courses and everything together because it's covering the common law. And I couldn't say everything, but a good part of the common law anyway. But if any person running for office, if they were to take that course, they, at the end of the day, will know the Constitution. They will understand what common law is. They will understand that we, the people, are sovereign. They will understand that our rights are not to be violated and that Congress can make no law. They will understand all of these things that they need to understand to hold the office that they are taking. So they need to have a right education. So I'm proposing to require them to have a right education. And so they need to come and take that course, Court Access in the Common Law. And maybe we'll force them to take all the other courses, or most of the other courses, or at least some of the other courses also. But what we're going to do, and matter of fact, I'm going to ask for some help right now. We've had some people who are educators. We had one individual who seemed to be pretty experienced in education, and he's kind of busy, but can't give much time, but they can give some time maybe. Anyway, if that person and anybody else that is has a background in education, maybe you can, and you want to volunteer some time, and it's time whenever you figure you've got the time to do it, an hour here, a half hour there, whatever it is. And the job that we'll be looking to be done is to go through the course that we're going through right now, Court Access in the Common Law, and create a test for each chapter. And we'll discuss some ideas upon that. If we can get two or three people, it would be nice. But even if it's just one or even two people, you know, to work together on this. And whatever time it takes, it takes. But to get this the questions for each chapter and then give that test to the individuals who are running for office. And when they pass that test, we'll give them a certificate that they have passed that test. And then you know this person knows the Constitution. They know the common law. They understand that we the people are sovereign. They know that we're above the Constitution and they're below the Constitution. They know that we have the power of nullification. They'll understand all these things that anybody that is a statesman should understand and don't. So we need to make sure that happens. So that's one way that we can make sure we get the right people in there. Then there is no excuse. And then they do know. And if they step outside of their authority, the committees of safety can correct them. After all, the statutory committee men right now, if your county chairman were to call up an individual that they supported to put them into office and said, hey, we want to talk with you and we'd like to see you at a certain date at a certain time, believe me, they're going to be either on the phone or in that place at a certain place at a certain time, and the law will be read out to them, and they will obey it. Why? Because it's the committeemen and the authority of that committeemen sits on the county chairman. So the committeemen have put that person on the ballot, so they brought him into the potential of coming and being elected, and they can also take them off that ballot. And also, if they're not going to be obedient and obey the law and respect their oath, then we can remove them by recalling them, and that could be done within 90 days. You see, once they understand the power and the authority of the people, then we'll have a government that fears the people, and that's when we'll have liberty. And until that happens, we're going to have tyranny, because right now, the people fear the government. But we can't get anywhere with these people. You know, in courts, we can't get anywhere with these people that sit on boards and we go talk to them and they treat us like secondhand citizens and ignore what we have to say and do what they want anyway. Because the people don't know how to put them into their place. They don't know how to take them out of their office. And of course, that's what we're teaching here at National Liberty Alliance. So we're not going to have proper government until we have proper education. And Jefferson spoke about this proper education. And this proper education is what National Liberty Alliance is teaching. And so we wouldn't have people like Cash Patel or anybody that doesn't understand the power and the authority of the people. They're not the masters. We, the people, are the masters. And they need to be obedient to us. And they're not. And it's our fault because we're not stepping up to do what we have to do. Of course, people who are hearing and doing things, well, then, you know, they're trying to work out the problem. But anyway, that's one of the proposals. So anyway, anybody who is a potential educator, you know, anybody who's got a background in education and would like to assist us in creating some questions for things, and we have a lot of other work to be done. And as time goes on, you know, we will pay these people. We just don't have the ability right now, but we do plan to go professional. We have no choice but to leave volunteering and go to a professional position here at National Liberty Alliance because once the people are professional, then they're going to work 40 hours a week, and they're going to be required to get the job done, and they're going to have a certain amount of work done, and it's going to be expected of them on a monthly basis, on a weekly basis, and things will happen. But right now, we have volunteers. It's very loose, very few people really working. Some people have taken positions and just sit there and haven't done anything. And again, maybe that's my fault, and we're going to try to correct that by giving instructions, specific instructions, on whatever it is we're asking people to do. But at the end of the day, we will have 10 positions on district coordinators, and the people that are producing, the people that are working, the people that are showing that they have the ability to do these positions, those are the people that will fill those positions full time. And I don't think we're going to need more than 10. I mean, right now we probably need 50 or 60 if we stay as a volunteer system, you know, as volunteer people. But we can't survive that way. We have to move professional. And that takes time. It is, you know, we need somebody with deep pockets to give us the maybe $1 million or $2 million to really get everything going, to know we can secure salaries and everything we need for a year or two. And in the course of that time, we will be able to build up in such a way and powerful enough that we'd be able to become self-sufficient, economically speaking. Because if you take, for instance, right now we have 10,700 people. So let's just say 10,000 members. So we have 10,000 members. And if each one of those people were given $5 a month, that's $50,000 a month. Do the mathematics. That's a decent amount of money, and that's enough to really drive us professionally. And we expect to go into critical mass, hopefully soon. It depends on how much we can get the word out now. And again, it's up to the people to get us to critical mass. The people coming to these meetings, they should be bringing friends and relatives and neighbors, whatever, sharing people all the time. When I'm out, I always carry a couple of cards, and we have business cards. You can go up, you can copy the ones that I got, you can make your own or whatever. And what I do is I get time. I might meet somebody and maybe on a line waiting for something or whatever, get a little chatting going or whatever. I meet people all the time and I talk all the time, and I often end up giving them a card and inviting them to come to National Liberty Alliance. Hey, we got a Monday night program going on. Why don't you come visit us sometime? I lead them to the front page. Find out what we're doing. Check out the front page. Watch the videos, particularly watch the seminar that we have. It's a long one. You don't have to sit and watch it in one sitting. You can come back 2, 3, 4 days in a row to watch the whole thing because it is 3.5 hours long. But anybody that goes through that and claims to be a patriot and upset with what's going on, and if that's what their claim is, and after seeing that, if they don't step up and work with us, then they're full of baloney. Because we have the solution, and the solution is clear. It's self-evident, because truth is self-evident. And we're built upon maxims, because we're built upon the common law. And common law is a construction of maxims, line upon line, precept upon precept. No contradictions. You find a contradiction, you found an error, you fix it. But anyway, we need people to work, educators, we need people working as the district leaders. So anyway, going back to the people, educators, if you're interested in helping us and working with us, I'd like to get a meeting with a few people, or even just one, as soon as possible. Just send an email to Jan, J-A-N at nationallibertyalliance.org. Tell them you're an educator, you have a background in education, and you'd like to help working on creating tests. I've written a lot of handbooks, and I've written a couple of major books, of course. I'd like to break them up and put them together into textbooks, and I could do that. I could do the breaking up and put them into textbooks, but I'd like to get someone to help working on questions. Again, on the end of each chapter, have questions for this and get them into the schools. We need our children to have proper education. We know we have a NCCS, National Constitutional MCCS, I know it's studies, Constitutional something studies. I don't know if anybody remembers exactly what that stands for, pipe it up. But anyway, they have quite a few books. We've spoken about them before. They have great books. People should be reading the books that they've got out. They got the 5,000-year leap, the real Thomas Jefferson, the real George Washington, the real Benjamin Franklin, the creating of a nation. I mean, it's just an amazing amount of great books that they have. And they do have some things that they put together for schools. They have a couple of textbooks for children. They have a coloring book on American history, for the young kids. So we can try to work with them and maybe even turn some of their books into textbooks with their permission. But we have books. We have to reconstruct an education for our children, because right now they're all good commies. That's what they've been creating for quite some time now. These our children are lost. We've lost a couple of generations right now. And we need to get it back. We need to get things back on track. So again, if you're an educator and want to help, get that email out. If you're an individual that likes to talk to people, that can communicate to people, and you want to take these positions as a district coordinator, come see us on Wednesday, and we're going to be spending some time talking about that. And hopefully at the end of the meeting, we'll have at least 10 people who are willing to work. And if we have more, we'll have more. That's good. The more the merrier. But eventually it will only be 10 people who will be paid positions. because, again, I don't think we're going to need more than that. And I think people would agree with me on that once they see what the workload is and how this progresses and how it works. Let me see if there's anything else I wanted to bring up. You know, we spoke about this before, and I'm not going to push too hard about this, but anybody who knows how to use social media, let Jan know, and maybe we'll have a quick meeting with them. And we need to get a presence on Facebook. We do have a presence on Facebook, but nobody's working it. We need to get somebody working it. We need to get a presence on Twitter. And we need to get on Truth Social. We need to get presence there, too. And any other social network that we can connect with and that people know how to, you know, own those things and know how it works and would like to represent us. And, you know, we'll get together and think about things and messages that we'd like to get out to the people through that. So, you know, anybody that has that kind of a interest and is on those different, you know, social medias, will want to work with us on this. And again, that eventually will become a paid position also. All positions with NLA will eventually become paid. We have to wait for money, and it could come quick and it could take a longer. You know, who knows? We don't know. But certainly we hope that critical mass is going to be soon, because if it isn't, we're going to lose this nation. And it's up to you to make critical mass to happen. It's up to you. Anybody who just has some connection to some place that where I can be interviewed, you know, just make the connection with your Jan, and Jan will make the connection and work out a date for me to go on their program. But we need to get it out. We need to get the word out. And I'll talk to anyone. I'll talk to small groups, and I'll talk to large groups. It doesn't matter. You know, but it's up to you to get that information to us. It's up to every member, as a matter of fact, to try to get us interviews and connect us with other places where we can kind of build the momentum of what we're doing here. And there's other things we'll talk maybe at another time. But right now, those are big things that we really got to get moving, and we've got to get them moving now. So I got some time to write whatever is necessary for instructions for these particular things. And we'll get into those details when we get into that, you know, when we meet and talk about those things. All right, I guess that's all I got. So I guess we'll go over to Q&A. I don't know, is anybody in the queue? Let's see. Okay, we've got a couple people in the queue. Anybody wants to get into the queue, now's the time. Anybody got a question, a comment, or even a correction? We're open for that. Okay. Hassandra in Hawaii. Aloha. You got the mic.
Hey. I was wondering, John, if you had a chance to expand on what your understanding of the Fifth Amendment is in regard to when
Which
it mentioned... What's that?
Which amendment?
Oh, the Fifth Amendment talks about...
No, I was asking what amendment. If I had a chance to what?
If you had a chance to be able to expand on your understanding of when it says that a person must be indicted before a grand jury for if it's a capital offense or an infamous crime. Do you have an understanding of the difference...
Yes.
Between
yes.
a capital offense and an infamous crime?
Yeah, an infamous crime, it's not the name of the crime that really makes it infamous or, shall I say, a crime that requires a grand jury indictment, but it's the nature of the crime and the result. So any crime where people feel that an individual has to be incarcerated, that requires a grand jury indictment. Now, they try to play a game with the Bar Association. Look, they've destroyed our justice system. They're the minions of the New World. They have destroyed our entire republic. You want to find the root of the destruction of our republic, it is the Bar Association. And they've been operating and working on this since 1750, since we were colonies, before we even became the states. They were in our courts, destroying our courts. And they haven't stopped, and they've accomplished their goal. They've abrogated the common law. They turned us into a corporation, you know, in 1871 through the Organic Act. They've brought about a slave tax. They've got the 16th Amendment through. They've got the people to believe that we're living under, you know, civil law, which is Babylonian law. We're in Babylon. You're enslaved. They have us to believe that they could have a debtor's prison. That there is no nullification, and that the judge gets to decide the law, not the people. You know, the people are too dumb. They're too stupid. They can't decide the law. The judge has to decide the law. But the point is, well, let me just finish off. The point is we're in really bad shape, and we have to fix this problem, and the only way we're going to fix this problem is through education. But the Bar Association has destroyed everything, and we have to deal with the Bar Association. And the Bar Association, again, they've created the mindset that they have in the courts right now, and it's a problem. But go ahead.
Oh, okay. So thanks for answering that. Because then I looked it up, it says capital offense would be something worthy of the death penalty. And then it says under infamous crime.
Capital, that's true. Capital offense would be something worthy of the death penalty. But go ahead.
Yeah. So that, you know, that it's just a good for all of us to, you know, get educated and understand, like, exactly what these things mean. And then the other thing is, when you look up infamous crime, it does specify felony. And that's interesting because
The Bar Association separated the misdemeanor from that and says, well, okay, you know, you commit a misdemeanor that you can go up to a year in jail and we don't need to get an indictment for that, you know, but that's not true. That's the point. Okay.
Okay.
And the ruling has been already ruled out that it's not the nature of the crime per se, but it's the penalty. In other words, if it's a crime that requires that people require a jail sentence for to be imprisoned, then that's an infamous. That requires a grand jury for indictment. Let's just go very simply. I mean, it's right here, really pretty simple in the wording itself in the Fifth Amendment. It says here, Well, I'm going to read the whole thing. No person shall be held to answer for a capital or otherwise infamous crime unless on the presentment or indictment of a grand jury, except in the cases arising in the land or naval forces or militia when in actual service in time of war. So that's talking about people who are soldiers and so on, particularly. In times of war or public danger. Nor shall any person be subject for the same offense to be twice put in jeopardy. That means a judge cannot overturn the jury and have another trial. Put in jeopardy of life or limb, nor shall be compelled in any criminal case to be witness against himself the right to not answer, you know, not to incriminate himself. Nor be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. Okay, now what is due process of law? Look at, in a criminal case, the beginning of that trial or the beginning of that case starts with the grand jury. If the grand jury puts the indictment, that's the beginning. So their decision is the beginning of the case. You cannot lose your right to life, liberty, or property without a due process, and a grand jury must indict. Now, there is another place in here. Let's see where it is. According to the rules.
Can I stop you and just say one thing? So in connecting the dots with what you've just said, you're saying that the relationship to an infamous crime being even a misdemeanor, that even if there's a sentence of jail time, that means you would have lost your liberty.
The nature
and
of
the penalty.
Yes.
Right? Okay.
Correct. The nature of the penalty. So again, and this is where the lawyers have played a game. They have separated misdemeanors, which in some cases may require a jail sentence, but under common law most likely wouldn't, more often than not require jail sentences. But in any event, okay, that's where they get away with it. They'll say, oh, you, when you go into a town court, and let's say they find you guilty of something, and they give you a trial or whatever, or they just the judge just makes a decree and sends you to jail, gives you a year in jail, maybe for driving intoxicated or something, or whatever the case may be. Well, they can't do that without an indictment. And now they do it because lawyers have been convinced by the teachers that teach them, the bar schools, and the judges, they all have been convinced that you can put someone in jail up to a year, because that's the maximum for a misdemeanor, I believe. But you can put someone to jail up to a year, and you don't have to get an indictment for that. That's all over this nation at this point, in every state of the union. And that's pretty sad, and that's pretty dangerous, too. But that's where we're at.
Okay. So that's super helpful, because I was just trying to get the context, because, you know, I have a situation where I'm looking at State versus Obrero, which is a Hawaii State Supreme Court case that actually ruled that all these, I mean, they were in district court via a preliminary hearing, via a written complaint, people that were even being charged for murder, second-degree murder. They were finding just cause in district court and sending it up to circuit court. So that ruling came down that they couldn't do that, that it had to be before a grand jury, an indictment before a grand jury in circuit court. But what I was trying to dig a little deeper into is just to go, well, wait a minute. If you look up the statutes, even in Hawaii state statute law, they've got all these things basically saying you can do it without an indictment for these felonies, but not for these felonies. And so I was kind of thinking about it. And I was going,
play. Again, it's not how common law works. It's how civil law works because, remember, you're a slave and they have to control you. And that's what this is all about, control. Shut up and sit down and be quiet, and we'll tell you what to do. And if you don't do it, we're going to put you in jail. I mean, that's pretty much where we're at. People, look, at people who haven't been in the courts, they have no clue. But one day, you know, if we continue the way we're going, eventually they will end up in court. You know, their big thing is to try to make everyone a criminal, and they figure, well, they can take the guns away from us that way. That's why there's so much of this going on, in my opinion.
Yeah. Okay, so that's interesting. So, say, for example, someone was trying to stand up for our rights, our constitutional, well, I'll say our God-given unalienable rights that are codified in the Constitution, and they wanted to remove for cause sort of someone that was a prosecutor that was trying to charge them with a Class C felony offense for something that they know, one, is just completely bogus, but they're just trying to harass them. Because it's all about intimidation and harassment if you actually stand up for your constitutional rights unnoticedly. And so if you remove it in federal court, that's something that could actually go to the Supreme Court, right? Because now we have Supreme Court that could actually look at the historical context of the Fifth Amendment, correct?
Well, you know, again, they're not going to hear the case. They don't want to hear a case. They don't want to hear anything that they have to go up against the status quo, and that's been my experience. I've been watching Robert Schultz's cases and the ones that go up to the Supreme Court, and they just refuse to answer these things, and they don't want to answer these things. Maybe because they got a gun to the head, they're stuck between a rock and a hard place, or maybe just because they're part of the problem. But remember, the ignorance is so bad. It is so bad when the United States Supreme Court thinks we're a democracy, that scares the heck out of me. I mean, that tells you how bad it is, okay? And these people, you know, are just lost. Look, I've been reviewing on for our next chapter, and I'm pretty sure it's going to be in the next session. We're going to talk a little bit about this because I remember coming up to this and getting into the infamous crime. And so we'll have the authorities, in a sense, in common law or in the Supreme Court that lays this out, what an infamous crime is. Again, it's not the nature of the crime, but the penalty which makes it a infamous crime. That's the key.
Super helpful. And I could be wrong, John, but like, I really believe that if you took all of your like knowledge, which is so vast, and all of your resources, and you put it into someone's case, even if it was a simple one like that, and you went all the way to the Supreme Court, like, who knows? I mean, who thought they would have taken Bruin? Who thought they would have overturned Roe versus Wade? It's not that it's a completely lost cause. I just think that if you want to get the coverage and the media attention, I think if you sort of do something that actually makes a big wave in terms of how the justice system works, and then it leads all these people to your website. I'm just saying, I feel like that could be a way to go.
Here's the problem with that, okay? Well, first of all, we're here now on that. We've been here already for quite some time. We filed papers in the federal courts, very powerful papers in the federal courts. Okay. The problem is we can't get it out to enough people. Again, I'm going back to asking for help of the membership, for the people anybody that can get us an interview anywhere, and we can start getting this stuff out. But I'm going to tell you what we're going to be covering in the course this session. We're going to start. We're moving into memorandums. And I decided what I'm going to do. We got, I think it's 18 memorandums that's connected to the court case we have before the United States Supreme Court right now. So we're going to start off reading that particular case and then go through all of the memorandum. It's going to be a great education for a great understanding of exactly where we're at, what kind of problems we have, and what has to happen in the courts to bring us back to courts of justice again. And we lay it out for them. This is an indictment upon the federal judiciary. It's an all-out indictment upon them. And so we're going to read that case. It's 20 pages. And I'm going to post that case up on Rumble. But the thing is people got to get the word out. If people don't see the case, they don't know about the case. And they have a little bit of an attention span because, look, there's a lot of questions that have to be asked. Well, by what authority do we even speak? By what authority do we have that we might come together as a unified United States common law grand jury? What makes us different than anyone else? What gives us that power? What gives us that authority? Well, that has to be answered, okay? And we do answer that. And one of the things we did do is when we filed the papers, they were returned, a clerk returned them. And the clerk that returned them, you know, sent us back a two-page letter. I mean, it was so absurd. They were so far off, and they haven't got a clue in what they're even talking about. They got their own rules and statutes that they think run things. They even got that confused, okay? Because some of the things that they claim to prevent us from going forward, and by rejecting our paperwork, ultimately the rules say the opposite, okay? So in any event, we responded back, and I forget how many pages it is. We did a writ quo warranto to the clerk. And a demand and a command to refile the papers. So we refiled the papers. That's already been sent out. And we've got the letter that they sent, two-page. We rebutted that letter. And then we responded with numerous affidavits, numerous memorandums showing the authorities and everything that we have and put it together. So my point I'm trying to get to is this. It's... people have to get a bigger, attention span to begin with. They have to get away from just getting out there and tweeting and actually read a book, because it's almost like reading a book to go through this case. But it's required to do that, to get an education. This case in itself, from beginning to end, all the paper, we've got 243 pages, I think it is, in the memorandums alone. Okay, 243 pages. The paper itself is 20 pages, supported by 243 pages of memorandums. Okay, 18 memorandums to be precise. And then we have another paper that we responded with, a writ quo warranto, and answering and dealing and putting this clerk back in their place and putting them, look, they just became compliant with subversion by blocking the paperwork. And because they didn't understand, the paperwork, they claimed it would be this, and they have no clue what they're talking about. Well, anyway, we corrected all that, and I'm sure they're chewing it over right now, and they're wondering which way to go with this, because we, we almost accuse them directly of being guilty of treason themselves, because you see, the law requires that once you know that treason has taken place and you become knowledgeable of that, you have a duty and you must report it. You must report it. You must report it either to some judge or to the president or to a governor. You must do that. You can't not, if you know about it and you do nothing and it's found out, you become guilty at part with the treason. Okay?
So misprision of treason.
This clerk, and that's the authority by which we're coming by, that and the authority of writ mandamus and writ quo warranto. Those are the prerogatives of we the people. And so once the clerk pushed those papers out, not looking at the paper, because we laid this out pretty clear to them in a demand to file, and they clearly they didn't read that. They just put things back in because it didn't seem the way they thought it should be intended back. So now that person is sitting there with the potential they are guilty of a crime. They have the opportunity now to understand this and do with the right thing, but they still have to answer the quo warranto. We want their oath, they want their bonds, we want their financials, and we're going to go chase the bond. We're definitely going to do that. But nevertheless, as far as a crime is concerned, as far as part of treason is concerned, if that person continues now to push this paperwork back, we have no choice but to consider an indictment for treason. And so that's something we'll have to think about and talk about in the near future, depending on how things go. But anyway, getting back to this paperwork, I believe that this case that we're going to lay out is going to probably be two or three sessions, which is going to be a memorandums. We've got lots of memorandums. We probably have 40 memorandums, maybe 50. I don't know. You put together the memorandums that are attached to this case, we easily have 50 memorandums. We're not going to read through 50 memorandums. But I think we will read through the important ones which will expose the problems in the court point by point by point by point. And I think you'll see that in the next coming session on Saturday, just by the reading of the 20 pages, which will probably take us about 40 minutes to go through. But it's powerful. It's empowering. I believe it empowers we the people. And it's definitely an education.
Yeah, and I don't doubt that your stuff is amazing and it's probably so much work and it's impeccable. I do wonder sometimes, too, if sometimes there's so much in there that they're not willing to take a look at it because perhaps maybe we just deal with one thing at a time. You know, just like, for example, like what we're talking about, just the point of going, we need to fix this one aspect and that one aspect alone, and that is that we have a right to be indicted before a grand jury for either the capital felony.
We've given them that choice already. We've given them 7 years of that choice. For 7 years, we have filed papers. For 7 years, we have informed them. We have written to them. We've given them mandamuses. We've given them notices. We've given them a writ quo warranto. We've laid out problems all over the place. One piece at a time. As a matter of fact, if you go to our website, you can read all this, what we've been doing for all these years now. Let me get to it. Right under here, federal court cases. Action against the judiciary. That's where we're at right now. Okay. We have plenty of things that have been going on under the federal court cases, but it's an extraordinary action. This has been going on for 7 years. Little piece at a time, going for this one, going for that one. And they just totally ignore us. Now we're coming in a different way, and I think in a more powerful way. Look, at these people are supposed to be highly educated. They sit and read tons and tons of material that bore me to tears. I find it very difficult to read through a lot of their stuff, their cases. It's just so boring. And their laws, you know, it's just boring, puts me to sleep. I mean, I push myself through the things I have to read through, but it's hard to read it. It's just boring. When it comes to common law, I'm wide awake, and I'm just, because it's so empowering. It's so revealing. It's so truthful. It's just powerful, you know? So, but anyway, we've laid it out. We're going to the big ones, the intellects on the top level, you know, the nine judges that are supposed to, they know all of these court cases. They know all of the rules. They know all of the law. well, now it's time to learn common law, which is just simple common sense. You don't need anything special in order to appreciate it. You just need to have common sense, which they've lost, that's a problem there with that. But nevertheless, I'll tell you what, I think it's going to be convicting. I think they're not going to want to hear it. You know, it's like getting a letter from the IRS and you keep putting it aside and you don't want to look at it, you don't want to read it, you kind of skim through it and you push it aside, I'll get back to it next week, and just goes on, you keep putting it off because it bothers you because they're coming out after you and they're assaulting you. Now, that's evil coming out. But just think about good, justice, and you're an unjust individual and you have to face justice with your unjust mind. You know, it's got to be very, very painful. It must be, because they know they're evil. They don't know that they're evil per se in the word evil, but they know they're doing wrong. They know they're benefiting. They know they're lining their pockets. They know they're injuring people. You know, I was asked to take a look at a video, and they asked me, I think it was Kathy who asked me this, and wanted to know whether I would post this. And I said, oh, absolutely, because, you know, I want to look at it first, of course. And I did post it. Matter of fact, I gave it its own page. And I think people should look at this. Anybody that hasn't been in the courts, anybody that's just learning and hearing about this, well, you need to go listen to these videos, and then you'll understand, and maybe it'll frighten you enough to say, I need to get educated. You know, I'm telling my children and even my wife, you guys, you've got to get educated, because something happens to me, you need to be able to defend yourself against these crazy people. But anyway, I put a page together. It's under Today's Issues, and it's criminal Family and Probate Courts, okay? And I think the one that was asked to be posted was Deception of Protection. But I'll tell you what, this is a three-minute video. I'm going to play this. This is a three-minute video. Let me play this. Yeah, 3 minutes
only
and 20 seconds.
Tonight, a 56-year-old woman worth tens of millions of dollars says that officials are trying to find her incompetent so lawyers can line their pockets. Fox 26's Randy Wallace has this exclusive report.
Long-time custodians have heard many horror stories about greed and corruption in Harris County probate courts. If what Monique Mandel is saying is true, hers could be the scariest story of all.
I'm paralyzed from down, and maybe research, I will find a cure for my, to be able to walk again.
A lawsuit followed the collision that left 55-year-old Monique Mandel confined to a wheelchair. She was awarded $17 million. Last February, she inherited $40 million when her husband died.
Just because I'm in a wheelchair, I can function just fine. I can pay my bills on time.
Mandel is under temporary guardianship in Harris County Probate Court No. 3. A doctor appointed by that court claims Mandel is incompetent and can't manage her finances.
She's not incompetent. I'm no doctor, but she's not incompetent.
They come in and under the guise, oh, we will protect you from being financially exploited. I'm being financially exploited by these people.
Last April, she found herself in a nursing home.
There was no order to put her in a nursing home. They chose to do that. They had discretion, and that was their choice. There was no requirement they take her money from her. That was their choice.
Before the temporary guardianship, Mandel received $60,000 a month. Now she gets $500 in prepaid cards. Meanwhile, about eight attorneys are racking in hundreds of thousands of dollars.
I believed in the legal system at one time. Now I seriously doubt it.
Attorney U.A. Lewis had to fight in federal court to get Mandel out of the nursing home.
They got lawyers, which they say on her behalf, to fight against her. So they made her pay for the lawyers who are fighting against her in that case. It's pathetic.
Lewis says probate judge Jason Cox fired her from the case after she pointed out the temporary guardianship ended last June.
I told him in open court, I'm an officer of the court, that I will not accept any payment from her directly or indirectly or in the future as a result of this temporary guardianship. There's no reason to throw me off this case except for if I'm trouble.
Why are you perpetuating this witchcraft, this witch hunt on me? I've done nothing wrong, but apparently my understanding is you are letting these people get away with stuff in court that normally they're not supposed to.
In this interview, we do have concerns about retaliation. She's being brave coming forward right now and letting the public know what's going on with her.
Judge Jason Cox told us he can't talk about pending cases, but says no orders were changed, that amendments were made during hearings. He points out that all the proceedings are open to the public and a matter of public record. Randy Wallace, Fox 26 News.
Time for people to wake up. We have a problem. And again, anybody, you know, people come to National Liberty Alliance and they've never been in courts and, you know, they hear things and they're here to try to figure out how to take the country back. You see how corrupt it is in our government? Well, the courts are no different. As a matter of fact, it all stems from that. Okay, they take our children, they take our parents, and why are they taking them? Well, first of all, if they, you know, once things disappear and there's no more interest in the child, who knows where they're going to end up? There's all kinds of evil going on out there, and I know a lot of people, you know, when they were younger, that went into this, you know, system, you know, taken away from their parents and is in the system, and they were abused in these foster parent homes where they were at. There's a lot of problems in those homes too, you know.
Yeah.
You know, my parents were foster parents, and you know, there's three of us natural born in our home, but there's five of us all together, and we had maybe a half a dozen more children that come through our homes, and you know, and they came into a good home, and they got help and get back to their own families, and some of them we adopted, and but there's a lot of bad families out there that are in the system for money or for whatever the purpose is, you know. And it's problematic, but it's all about money. I'll tell you what, if you're married and you have a lot of money and one of the spouses dies, well, you better bury that money somewhere real quick and not let anybody know about it, because if they find out that you got money, this is what they're going to do to you. And this is just one person. There's quite a few stories here. The one that was this one was an amazing one too. I'm not going to play the whole thing, but I do want to play who are part of this to see that.
Before you play it, I just want to say, to me, the key to that whole story was actually the court clerk. That's when we have enough people that say, this isn't even my relative, but I'm not going to sit by and be part of a corrupt system where I know that she's being maligned maliciously and her...
They're not going to listen to you. They don't want to listen to you. You know, we may have a chance collectively. And National Liberty Alliance, we could do something if we had the money and if we had enough people working with us. But we don't have either, so we can't do anything. We were doing habeas corpuses. We did over 100 habeas corpuses, most of which, just, you know, we only had a couple that actually went through. They ignored everything else. It just remained silent. They did nothing, absolutely nothing. We did all that. We knew that that was going to happen. I mean, we hoped that it wouldn't, but we knew that they would. And so that's why we have an indictment on the federal judiciary, because of that. All the non-judicial foreclosures, okay, maybe 100 of them we've got. And again, we made notice. We showed the crime. We explained how it works. We put it in the state court. We put it into the federal court, and everybody ignored it. They just did nothing, no response, nothing, okay? And so, you know, that's how we built our case. I mean, we did an indictment on Lavoie Finnegan's murder, okay? And there was a lot of people that we indicted on that one, big name people too. And again, just ignored and went on. And numerous other types of cases, but mostly that we did family court cases. You know, people who's lost their children to the system. I mean, they're so destructive. They don't solve any problems. And children live into that system. You know, as soon as they're brought into the courts, if they're 6, 8, 10 years old, whatever it is, they don't get out until they're 18, 19, 20 years old. And that's been their life, moved from home to home, destroyed, separated from their families. Even their grandparents can't even come in to assist, or aunts and uncles. Nobody can. They don't want a family involved. Because this is all about money. To take a child away from a family, it's all about money. If they got two or three kids, they got two or three bar attorneys that's going to make money on these children, and each one having their own position and thoughts and bickering and arguments, and then you got the other attorney that's just coming up against the parents, and then the parents have to get an attorney, and you go in there. I mean, this thing is ridiculous. You got six or seven attorneys and a judge who's attorney trying to make a solution for a family. How does that work? There's no mercy. There's no consideration. There's no compassion. There's no empathy. There's nothing but how much money am I to put in my pocket, because that's what it's all about. And people need to wake up. People who don't know, they better wake up soon. And we need to fight this stuff. And anybody can fight this. If only someone with some serious money, you know, they give money, people with a lot of money in big corporations, they give money away all the time for all these different things. Well, there's nothing more important than to save this republic. And hopefully one day, maybe soon, you know, but maybe not. Maybe we have to continue in the widow's mite, so to speak, and keep, you know, just crawling along until we get where we got to go. You know, God's ultimately in control anyway, so whatever's going to happen is going to happen. I'm good with that. But the bottom line is woe are the people that have opportunity to do something and they don't. Woe are the people that have the knowledge and the understanding and the realization of what's going on and don't step up to do something, you know. Mm-hmm. Woe are they, you know. I have no choice but to be in this battle because of what I know. I can't walk away from this.
Hey, John, it's 10:30 already.
Thank you. All right, we're going to move on. Final question.
The last thing I'll say is, you know, I just want to say one of the things that we're having to do, obviously, you know how Hawaii is just so corrupt, and you know, we don't have the constitutional fair.
Don't think you're more corrupt than any other state, because everybody I talk to says the same thing, and I say the same thing. New York is the worst. People in California say, well, you ain't been to California yet. Yeah, it's problematic
right.
Everywhere, but go ahead, I understand.
John, Georgia's the most corrupt state. Are you?
You see?
Okay, so basically we're banning the other
states.
Pennsylvania's worse. but one thing I want to say is, you know, we're all believers, and it's so cool because one of the things I saw happen, it was a miracle. God just showed up, is that, you know, we're trying to maybe go through the Committee of Safety, but we're hitting a wall because we basically don't have people, you know, in the right places to do that. They could actually hold people accountable. So I think I mentioned this the other day, but I kind of put some puzzle pieces together. And so whenever I was brought in, because I was detained or whatever, you know, because of my bench warrant, I am in the courtroom, and when I went to the jail, I immediately just put a blast out to all my friends, my Patriot friends, and I just said, they've got me. And I said, show up to my court hearing, record it. Just, you know, get over there and record it. And they did one better. They didn't just record it. They recorded it on video, which is great because you see me in shackles. And I went off on the judge, on the prosecutor. I literally said, I have a recorded conversation with my court-appointed attorney literally telling me that the prosecutor says the state is not going to let this go to trial. So literally saying, like, you might think you have this right, you don't have this right. Now, what they had done, since they thought they were going to make a big, huge media story about how this dangerous person that basically just saved her life and someone threatening to kill her with her Second Amendment right, of course they spin it, right? And they want to make a different narrative that makes it sound like I'm super dangerous. So they had live media blogging during that hearing, and my friend who knows the law like inside and out and has already gotten judges recused went off, and all his knowledge is just like full right on, you know, he knows his legalese. And so he's going off on my ineffective counsel, that the judge, he's been sitting through these proceedings, and every single proceeding was completely opposite. He's biased against me, he's prejudiced against me, he's discriminatory against me. And so this is all getting blown up on live. So what ended up happening was, you know, I didn't know any of this was going on until later he said, he sent me this note. And he says, just so you know, I blasted them. I sent them a scathing review on the live blog. And I was like, what are you talking about? So I was like, I've never seen a live blog before. I didn't know you could do that. So what they meant for evil, God used for good. And so then it just, like, they that's how I ended up getting that really good public defender who wrote the motion to dismiss. And we're waiting on that for about a month from now. But the point that I'm making is that I then went on the website, and I noticed there's a page that literally says you can submit for a request for live media blogging. And so sometimes we just have to get creative and go, okay, God, you know, if this door is open, closed, where is the open window, or where is the open, other open door?
Tell me the location of that, and I'm going to try to start looking that up, because there is a way you can get into the courtrooms with cameras. They won't let you in if you show up at one, and if you don't go through the proper process and way that they have to be able to get in there with it, you're not going to get in there. So if someone knows how to do that, we used to have a guy that worked with us here at National Liberty Alliance who knew how to do that, and it's just a matter of, and I never really dug into it to see what it is that he was doing, but I'm sure what it is it's just a form that has to be filled out, a notification in a certain amount of time that you're going to be coming in with cameras for that case. And that's something we should all think about and learn about.
Well,
and I definitely want to get to it. No. Try to finish off, because it's been a while. It's getting late.
Yeah.
We've got four of the
people. No. If you just listen to what I'm saying, you'll understand there's something way better than what you're just describing. And what it is I will send you the form. It's a Ninth Circuit, Federal Circuit form, but you probably have it in your circuit as well.
Yeah.
And what it is you, being NLA, can definitely proclaim that you are a member of the media. So what you do is, let's say you know there's a case that's going down, where you can start media blogging live on a Zoom, and you just start blasting the judge. You start blasting the prosecutor. You can do this from home. And anyone else that gets educated in their community.
All right. Well, look, we got other people, so we've got to move on. Why don't you send me some info on that, and then I'll do some research on that, because you're right. It's got to be everywhere. Also, look, to bring cameras in to the courtroom and set up a recording system or like you say, broadcasting it, or whatever you want to call it, blogging it, some other way. But look, send me some info and we'll talk another time on it, okay?
Okay, but last thing I'm going to tell you, you can make it a lot easier on yourself. When you go in on Zoom, you just record it. You have the whole thing recorded. You're at home. You're blogging the whole time.
Oh, yeah, if you're going in that way, of course. Yeah,
you don't need to.
Well, if you're going in through the computer to go into court, which they were doing, for the past couple of years, yeah, that's easy to do it that way. All right, but if you got any info on that, send it to mail@nationallibertyalliance.org, and I'll take a look at it. So, but I got to move to our next caller, because it's late, and then they're not going to get a chance to talk. So we got to move on.
Yeah, no, I just looked at that, because it made a huge difference in my case, huge.
Okay, thank you. Send me
some
info you got on it. Okay, LaRonda, you got the mic. Go right ahead.
Yes, I was just going to say, can you hear me?
We can hear you.
Okay. I was just going to say that I was surprised to hear that the Bar Association has been around since 1750.
That's right. That's when it was established in the colonies, 1750. And the purpose of that was in retaliation, ultimately, to Benjamin Franklin, who was railing on the king because he was treating the colonies like secondhand citizens, and he was upset with that. He was the instigator of this whole thing. Without Benjamin Franklin, we may not have come to where we've come to.
Yeah. Earlier you had talked about impeachment, and so I did a search, and I went to ballotpedia.org. Again, that's ballotpedia.org, and did a search. Then you search for impeachment of federal judges. And I found that to be interesting, that the impeachment of judges' history is there, and that from 1803 to 2010, there has only been 15 federal judges that have been impeached.
And that's my point. It's a problem, because they should be exercising this. Look, if we had an honest or a decent Congress, all these judges would be gone.
Yes. And then it says, of the 15, 8 were convicted by the Senate, 4 was acquitted by the Senate, and 3 resign before an outcome at trial. So I would suggest that. And then what it does show is that who nominated them, what the charges was against them, and then it states whether they was convicted or acquitted or resigned. So So again, I would like you all to go there and visit so that you can see the history of the impeachment at ballotpedia.org and then do a search for impeachment of federal judges. That's it. I'm out.
Okay, thank you. Let me just finish this note. Yeah, I wrote it down. I definitely will visit that, take a look at that. Others should do the same. Okay, thank you, LaRonda.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Marianne, you got the mic. Go right ahead.
Hello, John. This is Marianne from Indiana. Quick question for you. I missed the first hour of the meeting because I was at the local township, our local meeting, town meeting, tonight. So I was wondering if you made any comment about the jury nullification definition or what Cash Patel had said.
Yeah, we did. We talked about that. And, you know, what you want to do, though, here is if you go to underneath, let's see, hang on a second, let me get up here. If you go to Monday Night Call, okay, and click on that, you'll come down, and it's not up here yet because they're still making the recording, but you'll find the next recording here for tonight. You'll find that usually that gets put up tonight. Terry will probably get it up tonight, tomorrow at the worst case, I'm sure. And you'll be able to, you know, wind it, rewind it, whatever, and find the, because we did talk about that.
Excellent. Thank you so much. That's all I wanted to know. Thank you so much.
Okay. Thank you. Dan from South Carolina. You got the mic. Go right ahead, Dan.
I don't want to take up away from the fine commentaries. If there's any other individuals that could, that you could call back over there. The lady was so impressive about what she was telling you about Zoom. And I could tell you about some other things, but the subject matter tonight and the people that are on there, I just think it's awesome. I'd like to yield to some of those if you do have a minute, two extra, and I'll yield my time.
Okay. Thank you, Dan.
Yes, sir. You're welcome.
Kathy, you got the mic. Go right ahead. Person there, you just lost them. I kicked them out.
Hi, John.
Hang on a second. Anybody else wants to get into the queue, now's the time to do it. We've got about, about 15 minutes left. But Kathy, go right ahead.
I just wanted to thank you, John, for putting up the video, Deception of Protection. Anatomy of Involuntary Guardianship. He put it up under recent content. It's there under Criminal, Family, and Probate Court. So thank you very much. I would encourage everybody to watch that one. Deception of Protection, Anatomy of an Involuntary Guardianship.
They are pretty powerful. And, you know, I only got one up here on the Family Court. I started looking around if anybody has any real good ones that they're aware of concerning what's going on with the children and what else is going on at family court. This was pretty impressive, though, this guy. Let me see how long this was. It's not that long. It's only 15 minutes. And, you know, I thought he covered a lot of bases. And this was an insider. This guy was an insider. He was in the court system. He was involved with all this stuff. And it got turned around and used against him. So he's got a really good story to tell. Anyway, these are pretty powerful videos. Anybody has a video that thinks should belong up here, let us know. Send it to mail at nationallibertyalliance.org, and we'll take a look at it. And if it's appropriate, we'll put it up.
Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you, Kathy. Okay, let us go to our next caller. It looks like it's Robert. What state you're from, Robert? You got the mic. 903 area code. You got the mic. It looks like you're coming in on a phone.
Oh, I had to unmute myself. Thanks a lot for tonight's call. It's been very informative, and I learned so much each night. I would like to request that maybe we have a little narrower time limits on our calls, and maybe we can, more of us can get in. I had we were able to censure one of the third most powerful Republican legislator, and And I'm thinking we can do the same thing with our Speaker of the House. And I'm just wondering if you've given any thought to, you know, censuring our representatives or senators, or, well, we censured John Cornyn, but that was mainly we didn't get enough counties to make it effective, you know, our senator. I was just wondering if you've given any thought to removing people. Right now, we've got an opportunity to remove Dade Phelan because he showed up running the Texas House just totally smashed, drunk. And
how are you planning on removing them, through recall, or your censuring has a way to do this, or what?
Yeah, we're doing it censuring by county, and that's with all the, you know, a majority vote of the a two-thirds vote of precinct chairs in any county can censure anybody, either at a state or a, you know, a U.S. rep or a U.S. senator from our state.
Is it connected, the same thing as a recall, or is it a little different?
Well, the censorship just shows that he can't get on the ballot in the district that he's in if he gets censured. So they usually just step in and become lobbyists.
Therein is the power of the people through the committees of safety, because that becomes their job, and it's rightfully their job. The people that are in the, you know, the committee man process, whether they call them precincts or whatever they call them, you know, that's a statutory process. And that was created that way. They put statutes together and burned it into a way so that this is how you become a committee man. And then, of course, they use party bosses to control the people. And but there are places, I guess, where people are able to free themselves from party bosses, but it's far and in between. It's not enough in order to take the nation back, and therein is the problem. And that's why the committees of safety, when they take up this job of dealing with putting people on the ballot and even recalling them, recalling is only a matter of going out and getting a certain amount of signatures. It's usually a percentage of the signatures that was in the last vote, and then you have to get those signatures, and once you get enough signatures, then the recall is done and a new election is run, and that's how it works. Now, censuring, I'm not familiar with it at all, so I'll have to look into
it. There's a rule 44.
Not to put them back on the ballot, maybe. Is that what it is?
Yes, and we have what's called a Rule 44, and anybody that violates their oath to the U.S. Constitution, the Texas Constitution, or the Republican Party platform, particularly the first 10 items, which are the principles which are more related to natural law, the Constitution, the Declaration, and first laws, creation, and the Bible. And so anyway, we were able to do that pretty expeditiously with one of our representatives that had six counties. Three counties actually voted to censure him, and the other three counties were prepared to do it. They just and he saw the writing on the wall and stepped down. And he was the number three most powerful representative in Texas. So anyway, you know, we have a way to do it that works pretty quickly without gathering a lot of signatures. It's just getting the votes and less showing the evidence.
The only problem with that is that you have to wait until his time is up in his office, and then he's out. Is that correct?
Well, he had already filed to be on the upcoming ballot. When he got censured.
So when he comes up for the you know, to get onto the ballot, it's being blocked, and that's that. By just not walking the signatures form for that and walking the signatures for someone else instead. Correct?
Yeah. Well, we don't need to walk any signatures. It's like in Smith County.
Yeah, but to put someone on the ballot, they have to have so many signatures on the papers in order to get them onto the ballot. Is that
every county?
in Texas?
I'm sorry?
Isn't that how it works? You're in Texas, right?
Yeah, right, right.
Yeah.
And so if we censured our Speaker of the House and removed him, that would be a big warning call for the entirety of the United States.
Mm-hmm.
With somebody of that much power, he's arguably the second most powerful person in Texas. So, yeah. And he's committitted enough problems where that can be done.
Okay, but again, censoring, correct me if I'm wrong, because I'm trying to get my head wrapped around this. Censoring is really, you know, making a complaint to the individual, so to speak, and then denying his return on the ballot for the next election. That's pretty much what it's for, right? Okay, yeah.
Right.
Right. And again, the committees of safety can do that also as much as anything else, because once they become the power within the county, then that they're going to be relied on to get in. But, you know, what we have to do for sure, what we talked about earlier tonight, is we got to make sure that we put statesmen in office. And we have to make sure that they get qualified somewhere. We have a solution to that. So.
That's what I've been doing. I've already filled like six precinct chairs in my county. Two of them are Gideons. One's a preacher, and another one was a former city manager, probably mm-hmm. one of the best city managers we've ever had for the largest city here. And so, you know, that is something that's eminently doable. And I think using all your, you know, your committees of safety and committees of correspondence, you know, that's all just critical stuff that needs to be done.
Absolutely.
You know, We would hope
that once the committee, well, I believe it's going to happen anyway, but once the Committee of Safety becomes powerful enough and overtakes the committee man process within that county, the committee men that are serious about this and really wanted to do the job right, where they get a problem working with, you know, the parties, unfortunately, they will come over into the Committees of Safety. And there's no limit to that. You know, committeemen, there are a limit. You know, like, for instance, my county has a limit of 249 committeemen, whereas in Committee of Safety, we can have 2,449 people in the Committee of Safety, which are committeemen. They're all committeemen. That's who they are. That's the original title. That's where it comes from. And so it's an unalienable right to participate in government by consent. And, of course, the more, the merrier. You know, many hands make light work. I mean, then you have a lot more people. You can create a lot more subcommittees, and you can put a lot more people onto the educational committees and get to a lot more schools and bring education back and deal with the town boards and start removing these people who won't listen and obey and refilling the office, their political positions back up with good people. I mean, this is what we need to be doing. This is the only way to save America. And this is the only way to keep it once we save it.
What I'm talking about is complementary, I think.
Absolutely, yes.
For example, in my precinct, I've reached out to like four. I've actually talked to 400 of the people in my 3,000 person precinct, and each of those could be part of that Committee of Safety. And I'm just one of the precinct chairs out of 72, and they can do the same thing as well. The structure's already there. I have the phone numbers and addresses and emails of like 1,700 Republican voters in my one precinct. And so you multiply that by 72, and, you know, precincts with good precinct chairs, and I've already seated six of those people, and so we can use your knowledge and your handbooks and all of that, but we also already have the power and the statutes within the party lined up, this Rule 44 thing, where if somebody breaks their oath of office or if they preside over that Texas House so drunk he can barely stand up, that violates principle number 7 in our platform. And then the other thing is that she's a Republican, and he seated 8 Democratic chairs, which is over a third of the Democratic of the committee chairs, you know, in the Texas House. So he violated our guaranteed Republican form there, because he sold our votes for power from the Democrats to get seats in these committees, and it's just created chaos for every bill that we wanted to get. All the Democrat bills are passing, all the Republican bills are failing, all because of this speaker named Phelan. We call him Dave Phelan.
The ultimate problem to this whole thing, and I'd love to discuss it further, maybe if you come back on next Monday and bring this issue up and we can talk some more, get into more details, but the problem is the parties. That's the problem. When you have people acting in a block instead of acting off of their hearts and their minds, because listen, first of all, they need to work within the authority that they have. They should not be able to go outside of the authority that they've been given. It's like a legislator, for instance. They've got certain authority. They can talk about certain things and they can vote on certain things, but there are a lot of things that they can't, and they do, because nobody's paying attention to the Constitution. That's the problem. And the people are too ignorant to it to be able to say, whoa, what are you doing? You can't do that. So they don't even know that. But the problem is with the parties. If you put statesmen in and you take the party out of the whole thing, because in a republic, parties don't work. It's destructive. Parties are for democracies, and the purpose of democracies is to totally destroy the whole process and then they put an oligarchy. That's the process. And that's why they've been pushing us as a democracy for a very long time. But the problem here goes back to the party. Look at people should be going in there, forget a party, forget working with a bloc. Look at a situation, see if, first of all, you have the authority to vote on it, and then if you do, or if you don't, you argue at the point, hey, we don't have the authority to deal with this problem, we got to take it back to the people. You know, not us, to the people. But the thing is that, okay, now they have the authority to say, well, what's right and wrong? You know, you act in a just way, you look for what's right, and you make your vote accordingly, in representing the people that voted you in. Forget about your party. You're representing the people, not the party. You know, and that's what we got to bring this whole system back to.
Okay, that's really the great blessing of this whole thing, is the Republican platform is all about doing the right thing.
Absolutely.
The first item there is they can't violate creation or the Bible. That's the first one that allows them.
Well, look at Robert. It's getting late, and I got one other person I want to get to them. But I would like to pick up on this conversation if you can bring it up next week, okay? Because this is a good conversation that we need to really address and look into, and let's discuss it if you can. And if you miss next week, we could do it the next week. But let's get back on this. Okay.
Okay. One last thing. And that is the access code. I don't know how many times I entered it until I got it right. So I didn't know. Is it *61#?
Oh, you mean to get into the queue?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, it's *6, and then *6 and then a 1, I believe. Jan is, or Terry, is that what it is? *6 and then a 1?
Whatever it is. Did you announce that early and often in the call?
That works from a cell phone, John, but it doesn't work if you're on the web.
Right. Well, is there a button there or something if you're on the web or what?
Right. There is a button if you're using the app.
Okay. Yeah, any app, there should be a button to get into the queue.
Well, I guess I haven't seen that button. So, I do use the app. And,
well, the best way, if you've got a computer, the best way is to come into from a computer with a browser, because it's bigger and you can watch, and you get, because we share the desktop, and you can see more. Yeah. You know? But let me get LJ. He's the last person.
Okay.
And,
thanks a lot.
I'd like to talk again on this issue when we can. Okay. Thank you.
Great.
Okay, we'll take our last caller here. LJ, you got the mic. Go right ahead.
Hello, John. Can you hear me? This is LJ from California.
Can hear you from California.
Hey, John. Yes, I am a student in the Court Access Common Law course, really enjoying it. I'm very blessed that I do not have any court problems right now. And the way that I learn is I'm a kinesthetic learner, so I learn by doing. I actually have a friend who is in Arizona. She totally got, I mean, once they found out that this woman had money, they pretty much screwed her over. She hired an attorney for a DUI, and she wound up going to jail still, and all of her rights were violated. So at some point, I want to help her sue these people. And I just wanted to know, what is your take on her exercising her unalienable right to an unlicensed assistance of counsel? And if so, what is your take on the whole unlicensed practice of law, where it is our unalienable right, where we can have assistance of counsel, and it does not necessarily have to be a licensed bar attorney?
Right. Well, the Constitution doesn't even say that it has to be a lawyer, so you can have anybody to counsel, anybody to assist you. That's number one. Number two, this idea where they feel comfortable to say, well, you have to have a license. Well, that's a license to practice civil law. I don't go into civil law courts. I go into common law courts. They may think it's a civil law court, but I call it for what it is, and I open up a common law court. And I've made my argument. We do have a paper, which we'll be looking at, as a matter of fact, over the course of the next couple of sessions, because that's one of the memorandums we're going to be talking about, which is the right to practice law. There is no such thing as a license to come into a court. And every individual should be taught in school on how to come into a court and represent themselves. Sometimes it may be wise to get someone to articulate the case, or have them as a second chair, or even put them as a first chair. You know, if you're going to have two people working a case and you have the main person running it, but the other person also gets the opportunity, so you can play either role. And sometimes it might be wise to pull that second person in. There's a lawyer that maybe has a certain skill in a certain area that you need. But again, you have a right to practice law. And also a right to represent people, okay? And now this person who went to jail, I'm sure they were pulled over on a commercial code. And if you go through and you go back and you look it up, you'll find out it's a commercial code that they applied against them, which is a DWI. You'll also find out that they're in what's called a nisi prius court, which is an administrative court and doesn't have the power to fine or incarcerate. Yet they do fine, and yet they do incarcerate. Because they do it to people who have nothing to going on. They do have the power to give a fine, which is to execute a code, okay, upon someone who's operating commercially, and they're pulled into that court. So that's the most they can do. If it's going to be something where they're going to incarcerate someone, it's got to move up into a court of law, and that requires to move either into a county court, and more likely a state court ultimately. Because those are the only two courts that really have the ability to hear courts of law, cases in law. The county courts are limited, though. State courts have the power to hear on any case, with very few things that they can't hear, which is really on the federal level. So this person, ultimately, you can challenge this whole thing. Once you realize they don't have jurisdiction, you can challenge jurisdiction. And that you can challenge any time. Even after the court case is over, you can go back and say, hey, I just discovered you guys don't have jurisdiction. You can reopen it back up, challenge jurisdiction. Once jurisdiction is challenged, it has to be decided. And you can win on that because they don't have the ability to give due process in that court. So it's not a court of law, it's a court of equity. So anyway, you'll learn a lot more of that, I'm sure. By the time the court, our court course is over, I'm sure you'll have enough knowledge to realize that. But like every case, puzzling is the key thing. Once you have the figure out how to work things through the system, that's really the easy part. Although it may seem complex because it's so overwhelming, there's so much stuff. But once you realize, you're really just working through understanding the layout, understanding the process, and then seeing all the forms and then using it. The real work is taking your case and working through your case, puzzling through the things that you need to cover in your case and your defenses and so on, and then apply it in the paperwork. That's the real work, but that takes thinking and time, and you just got to spend time with it, puzzling it. Puzzling When you puzzle anything, you'll eventually come to the solution if you just don't give up on it. I mean, that's been my experience in life. Anything I puzzle through, anytime, anywhere, I always eventually come to a solution or a conclusion, eventually. So anyway, that's really the big part of it.
Okay, great. So once I'm done with this course, you're basically saying that I will be able to help her because she hired this lawyer. This guy didn't. She still wind up going to jail. She still had to wind up. And this is her first offense. This woman has never been in trouble, you know.
Yeah.
And it's just ridiculous. So I want to help her. I want to go at these people so bad just so I can practice this when I'm learning. Because like I said, I don't have any court stuff on my own, thank God. But I definitely would like to practice and go after and come for these people. And she's totally down because she realizes that after hiring the attorney and he didn't do diddly squat for her, she's like realizing that she has been done wrong. So she's totally down to like let me help her to go after these people and sue them.
Is she still in jail?
Okay, cool. Well, I'm excited. Can't wait to get to that part of the course. And I appreciate you and all of the leaders here at NLA for the work that they do. Thank you very much.
Yeah, LJ, let me ask you a question. Is she still in jail?
No. She was in jail for, they put her in jail for about 2 weeks. She was on house arrest for 2 weeks. And right now she has the interlock on her car, and she is restricted, and she can only go to and from work.
There's going to be restitution on all of these things at some point in time. I mean, you know, we've spoke about this, and if you bring it up another week, we can talk about it again and get into more detail about restitution. Once we get on the other side of devolution, there's going to be restitution for everyone. But as far as the court case is concerned, yeah, people will get out of this course as much as they put in it. I've given them everything. I mean, look at I don't know everything, so of course there are blank spots here or there that we have to figure or work through, and you know, when I discover them, I start to work through them. So, but the thing is you have enough here that's going to be given in this course to be able to really battle any case you want. Again, everything has to come with really, you know, reading. Reading is the key to really knowledge and just getting good at it and then spending a lot of time in the case looking at it from every single angle. Puzzling it. Those are the two keys. And reading, you learn more about the common law. You learn about how cases are put together by reading other cases. But a lot of cases are boring. You know, when it's in the civil law side, it's very boring. It's in the common law side, it's exciting. You know. But with that, we'll bring us to the end. Appreciate it, LJ. Thanks.
Thank you.
Okay, we're done for the night. Lord willing, we'll see you all next Monday. And those who are in the course, we'll see you on Saturday. And those who aren't in the course, why aren't you in the course? Anyway, good night.